Rob Fodor, welcome back to the show. How are things?
1-2 combo. How we doing, buddy?
I'm doing well. Talk to me about the state of the Miami Heat. I mean, you know, every team goes through some rough spots.
Yeah, I mean, everybody does. I mean, there'll be teams, you know, I was talking to, you know, obviously we know a lot of the coaches from other teams, and it's, you know, we'll get a chance to talk to them pregame and sometimes the day before or something like that. And there've been some teams that have been incredibly healthy, that have been able to keep their units together and build what they're, you know, build what they're building. And, you know, you can kind of see that they're way up there in the standings because they're super talented. But then, you know, I've always said that you kind of need three things to be a champion. You have to be a great team, you have to be on a roll, and you got to be a little lucky. And the luck has a tendency to fall in the category of good health, timing of good health. You know, if you think back a couple years ago, I think we lost in the Eastern Conference Finals to the Celtics in game 7. And we had just lost two guys, you know, for that last game. And Jimmy, we had a shot in the air to possibly win it. But we missed that series. And then Boston goes into the finals and Golden State all of a sudden had everybody healthy and they were all playing well together. And you're looking at it going, gosh, Boston could get there. But, you know, they were nicked up a little bit from us, and Golden State was playing great. And they had all of their, you know, if you have all the bullets in your barrel, it makes it really different. You know?
Yeah. A lot of winning a championship is just who stays the healthiest at the end of the day. Right.
Yeah, I mean, the seasons are long and it's a war of attrition and mental stability, and there's a lot that goes into it, as you know, it's a lot that goes into it.
So. Most definitely. You deal with the education of basketball, Rob. You know, I'm on the media side, so I deal a lot with narratives. And the narrative is, when it comes to the Miami Heat, you know, lesser known players play up. How much of this is player development? How much of this is identifying who a Heat guy is before he gets to Miami?
Wow, that's I don't know if I could quantify both sides of it. Mm-hmm. I mean, certainly you're looking at what kind of upside somebody might have, what tools they're going to bring to the table, and then what kind of personality. You know, we have a saying. It's hard to be one of us, and it, you know, we have a saying, we're not for everybody, and we're not. You know, there's a way.
What's the hardest part?
I mean, just the daily participation of excellence, you know, some people take a little bit, I don't know, a little bit less driving approach to the very same thing. You know, everybody tosses the word culture around, especially when it comes to us. But I think that I have a lot of fun with people when they're going to have that conversation about culture. And if you say, okay, well, define culture for me. When I ask people that, they kind of look at me and go, well, it's one of those vague concepts. And really, I think a simple way to take a look at it is it's simply how you do things, you know, and how you do things, and then, you know, what standards at which you do them. So different people have different standards. Different people have different ways of doing things. And they're all philosophical, which is why, you know, people have a way to get there. There's a lot of different ways to try to win a championship. There's a lot of different ways to try to build a team. And some people build it through the draft. Some people build it through free agency. Some people build it through player development. And, you know, it's obviously going to be a combination of all of those. But I, you know, it's a fascinating thing about how a league, when you look at people look at it, it's like, man, how are the same teams always playing for it? You know, and that's not, and it, that's the case in a lot of sports, you know, it's not just basketball, but same teams play for it because it's because of the way that they do things. And it's that's what they expect.
And when it comes to the Heat, it feels like they're always playing for something at the end, but nobody's talking about them in the beginning and the middle.
Yeah, and there's a lot of times, you know, at the end, people, you know, it's look, it's hard. You know, you look at when you're playing, this season is a good example. It's hard to tell how good somebody's going to be. It's hard to tell how good we are because we haven't had a really meaningful sample size of what our team's capable of. No. And you've got to be able to figure that out as the season goes on. And obviously in the late part of the season, you're hoping you get your bodies back and get people healthy and you get to figure out. I think the word rhythm is kind of bandied about as a catchphrase for not really being able to articulate something. But I think when you get all your bodies together, you want to figure out the connection of how you're going to do it together. You know, that the priorities are all connected, that the roles are clear, that, you know, your pecking order is in place and people are buying into what the main thing is.
Yeah.
And that's when teams are dangerous. And, you know, when everybody's playing, like you see, there's talent everywhere.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. Everybody wants to say, oh, the Detroit Pistons are, that's a win. I mean, listen, it's hard to win any one game because you know what the other team has? 15 NBA players, you know, and they're all really good. So you've got to be able to bring so much to the table for each game. And that's why you see teams go through different struggles for injury and momentum of emotion. And you never know because there's human beings on each team. And sometimes during the middle of the season, you never know. People might be going through stuff. And then your team goes through it together with you. And it's, you know, and eventually it becomes a rallying cry, but there's a lot of times where it's down times and people are struggling just being humans.
You know, I was actually thinking about this topic earlier, how important is it for players to get along off the court to have on the court success? Cause I once had a college coach who said, hey, I don't care if you guys get along as long as you guys play well.
Yeah. I mean, in the business of things, there's something about looking over at that guy that you're next to and wanting to be able to do something for them, you know?
Yeah.
If I think it goes to the word I just used, it goes to connection. You know, the more connected you are, you can be connected in that vein of we're all going for a championship. And you can then, you still need more layers. So even if people don't like each other, if they're connected in the singularity of the goal, we want to win a championship, this is what it's going to take. I don't have to go hang out at your house, but I'm going to trust you to do what you do every day here. That's the championship habits that you see. And there are people that don't live like the other guys on the team. You know, that's.
Yeah.
That's
yeah. I mean, there's young guys and there's family guys, right? Or there's younger family guys and there's older guys who don't have family. It's like they're all in different boats.
There's vets, there's rookies, there's people trying to get contracts. There's people trying to, you know, be all-stars. And there's all kinds of, you know, you have the individual ambition that you earn your living from, coupled with the idea that the real thing is the team goal.
Right.
So it's, you know, there's a terrific balance about that. And it's, you know, so it's that, and it's fun. And you find out that there are certain people that handle that and be that are able to mix those elements of teams together really, really well.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And it's okay to have different personalities. There's quiet people, there's loud people, there's there's example guys, there's, you know, there's it's fun. You know, it really makes it fun.
Speaking of different personalities, we saw emo Jimmy, and then when the playoffs come along, everybody talks about playoff Jimmy. What about his mentality allows him to tap into playoff Jimmy, if you will, and become a top five player in the NBA? And Rob, I'm not saying he's not a top five player when it's not playoff times, but you know, the stats go up, the intensity goes up. So what does that say about him?
No, he's such a phenomenal basketball player. Mm-hmm. And he's really a terrific human being in that he's a great example in this one. He's very comfortable with who he is and he's comfortable in his own skin.
Mm-hmm.
So if he feels like he wants to do something, he does it.
Right.
And if you think about the freedom that that gives people, you know, it's really hard for people to just say, okay, this is what I'm going to do, and I don't care if you like it or not, you know?
Yeah.
And then the other part of it is he is one of the smartest basketball players that you'll ever see step on a basketball court. And then he's just this apex competitor. He's such a phenomenally competitive human being. And it's not just the basketball court, it's everything, you know?
Yeah.
And because of that, because he loves that competition, he keeps himself the way he keeps himself. And he's constantly ready for that moment where it's time to put the cape on.
How different does he look for you when it comes to regular season and postseason?
Less different than I think. You know, I think people think.
Okay.
It's just that as you get down the road of that higher level competition, more is required of the greater player.
Yeah. Yeah, but it seems like he steps up his game from the regular season more than any other player, right? Like compared to what he does in the regular season, and you see what he does in the playoffs. Not saying he's bad in the regular season again, but it just looks
Yeah. And what I would say to that is it's because he's looked at through the lens of a microcosm of the season. But say, for example, you look at somebody in the microcosm of a single game. Perfect example is what happened last night. Last night, the Denver Nuggets go into the Toronto Raptors, and they're down, I don't know, 30, right? Mm-hmm. Jokic goes out there. Jokic just plays the right way, and the ball's supposed to move over here, and this is what we're going to do. And it gets down to that point in the game. It's like, oh, I guess this is what we need me to do. And it's a different right way to play, where the superstars – have the ability to do what no one else can do at the moment no one else can do them. And sometimes that's a thing that you see in the season. Sometimes you see it within a game. And the superstars have that tendency, though. You know, it may look like they're cruising, but they're just, you know, they're getting everybody involved. They're building their teams and they're getting, you know, looking for that win. And when the time comes that people are going to lean on the superstars, that's why they're superstars. They produce in that moment and they produce in that period of time.
You know? Right. Yeah.
Which truly makes
Jaime Hawkins, how does he fall to 18 in the draft? And talk to me about his development.
Well, you know how it's looked at. Mm-hmm. You know, if you look at somebody, well, he's 22 years old, or he's 23 mm-hmm. years old. You know, I heard this phrase a long time ago. I had an opportunity to play one last contract over in Europe at 42 years old. And I was always making jokes with me. Man, this old guy. And I heard somebody say this and it stuck with me. There's no old players and young players. There's only good players and bad players. You know, that's partially true. But, you know, when you look at good players, I think the idea is, like, if you redrafted last year's draft right now, would the first pick still be the first pick? Yeah.
Yeah.
Second pick still be the second pick? Yeah. And you probably get to, you know, like guys like Jaime and Brandon Podziemski, those guys move up because people have seen, oh, wow, they are really good players.
Right.
You know? You're looking at potential and you're looking at, you know, star power. And I think Jaime was, you know, obviously he was slightly misunderstood, you know.
Yeah.
Like, is he a good enough athlete? Well, shows up in the dunk contest.
I mean, he was in dunk contest before college, right? I mean.
You know, people are like, whoa, wait a second. You know, and you got to pay attention to that. And he's really big. But I think the thing that makes those young guys kind of stand out early is their brains. He's got a good brain, you know? He's mature. He's able to process things. He's able to communicate with stars. He's smart enough to play with good players. And that's a big deal. You have to learn how to play with great players.
Yeah, he seems like such a complete player already. What would be an improvement area for him?
Oh, there's, you know, I mean, there's always things, you know, obviously defensively, when you come into the NBA, it's such a different it's such a different planet. And the NBA game is so completely different than what the guys have played before they've got here. So you've got to be able to learn, you know, imagine somebody coming from college and you say, here you go. And you hand them a 350 page playbook with terminology.
Yeah, man. Like every level you go up, that playbook gets bigger. I'll tell you that.
And it's funny because yes, there are plays and yes, but there's definitions. There's definitions of things that provide clarity, provide direction. You know, like when you've got a team that's really good, you can come down there. It's like football calls, offensive calls. Okay. They'll come out and you know, it's a color, it's a number. What they're doing is they're calling the offensive line coverage. But the point I'm getting to is the terminology is such that you can come out there, put the 11 offensive guys out there, and you can make up a play that they've never run before by the terminology of the call, and they'll run that play. You'd never see that in college.
Right.
Ball or high school basketball. I mean, it's just the thing about the NBA is you have the smartest players in the world, you know?
Yeah.
And obviously the highest levels of professionals are similar to that as well, but it's, you know, it's an intellectual game that's played at high speed with tremendous athleticism and competitiveness. And when you have somebody that, you know, has a lot of those elements or all of them, they look like him.
Yeah.
You know, they look like those guys.
You mentioned, you know, you were playing overseas at the age of 42, and there's probably people listening to this podcast who want to become an NBA staffer one day, right? What was your journey from like that point to where you're at now with the Heat?
Well, yeah, I was in the middle of the journey at that point, and I did not get to play at 42. I had a chance. I had five facial fractures and at the wrong time, and it was like, okay, all right.
Yikes.
I guess I'm not supposed to do this. So my journey to the NBA is, I guess I would say, unique. You've heard part of the story before, obviously, but you know, coming up as a player, I mean, we're a lot of us are very curious kinds of players. We're hardworking guys. We want to understand this is how we get better. This is how. Da, da, da. So I'm pretty analytical, as I'm sure you as you know, and I'd watch and I'd listen to coaches and I'm listening to things that people are being taught. And yet all the difficulties, all the problems that people had were the same. And here are all these committed people to getting something, to go down this path of greatness. And yet the difficulties were still the same. People still struggled with the same things in shooting. They still struggled with the same things in making layups, making free throws, you know, different defensive and movement and balance and all that kind of stuff. So I decided that the answers to these problems, when you think about all the committed people we're talking about, nobody was coming up with the solutions. So I kind of looked a different direction. My thought was that the answers did not lie within basketball. So I started to study how the body worked, how the mind worked, neuroscience, biomechanics, anatomy and physiology, kinesiology, et cetera. You've heard that list. Geometry, physics, animals, cats, you know, all kinds of different stuff. And basically decided that the game had always been taught wrong. And that it's kind of a laugh line when I start that at clinics, but I said, follow along with me here, you know? And if like the first time you ever play basketball, first time you pick up a ball, you did it, I did it. We grabbed the ball because we asked somebody, we said, hey, I want to play basketball. And the first thing you do is get a basketball. And then if you start when you're really young, you kind of bend over and you smack the ball against the ground. And then the first cool thing you did was it's the step over between the legs move, right? And everybody's really excited because that's the first cool thing you ever did. Now, the problem with that, if you understand the neuroscience, how your body works and how your central nervous system works, is you just taught your body's part of a thing called the central programming generator, which basically says the first time you do something is how you will always do it. And what you just taught yourself by that cool step over move is that you're moving your body around the ball. And that is completely backwards of how the game is supposed to be played. And it's the only game that's taught like that, you know, because it's kind of taught by accident, you know. And that's why at the beginning you go get great athletes to try to overcome all this stuff. And you've heard, you know, elbow straight and shoulder square and feet square and all that stuff for shooting. I don't teach any of those things, you know, because that's not how your body works. So I just kind of went down the road of this study. And then, you know, once I understood all that, I said, okay, now I have to figure out how am I going to teach all of this? Because that's a really great question that I love getting when you're with the highest level coaches in the world. So here, I have an idea of we can do this or this can be done. And the coaches will say, okay, great. How do we teach that? And you have to have it all in place.
Yeah.
Every single layer. Like I was just on the floor with a whole bunch of our guys today. And one of them, I was having a conversation. They said, what you're going to find is that every single one thing that you're going to learn and how to handle the ball and move dribbling the ball is going to be the same as defense, as shooting, as everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I use that phrase. It's same, same, same. And because of that, what you're learning, like I don't teach moves. I teach people how to move, right? And then we allow their greatness and their artistry to create a move. Now, once they have a move or they're working on a move, and yes, we can teach people different moves with the ball. But the point is when you're teaching, when you see somebody doing that, I will help them go within the biomechanics and the science of movement and say, here's how you're going to do your move more efficiently and better. And then the guys just, you know, really high level guys jump right. They recognize that. Whoa, okay, that makes sense. Let's do that. And then poof. Now you take a super high level skill and you put it on a player and then boom. So my journey is I was able to, obviously you start off, I was doing it with young players and then I was still playing some with, you know, with the high level guys and invite games. And then you get to know guys and they're like, you know, okay, who the hell are you? And how do you do that? And I said, well, you know, and I teach this and next thing you know, somebody says, hey, could you help me?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, so with this specific part to get to the Miami Heat, I started with Mike James. And this was the Mike James who played for the Raptors and the Rockets and
right.
He was a New York kid. And just we had a blast and he was playing in the Miami High invite basketball game that I was playing in. And somebody on our team goes, hey, you need a bucket, throw it to your guy over there. He's looked right. Over at me. You know, they're looking like that guy.
Yeah. Yeah. right.
It just shocked me. So, you know, during the game, he threw it to me four times. I threw the basket four times. We end up winning the first game and he comes over and sits down. He goes, okay, who the hell are you? You know,
right.
We started talking and that's how you make friends. And because you have this earned respect because they just saw you do something that's real, right? So I said, for lack of a better term, I guess that you could say I'm a shooting coach. You know, that's not
what
I do. I teach people how to move and I'm a player development guy. And he says, you know, I've been looking for somebody. So I went to the American Airlines Arena and we had a session about an hour and a half and he just really did great stuff. And he was super excited. I guess the whole week he was talking about it and started telling the coaches, yeah, I'm coming in with this guy this weekend. And we came back the next weekend and we're up in the gym and Mike comes up and goes, yeah, one of the coaches wants to meet you. And the coach was coming up to throw me out of the gym and it happened to be Coach Spo. And he came up and Spo is incredibly fair and incredibly curious. And he watched a couple of things. He goes, okay, that's different. So mm-hmm. He came over and I engaged him. I said, hey, why don't you jump in with us? And we were doing some balance stuff and I diagnosed. And Spo was a professional player in Germany.
Right.
And I diagnosed something for him that he knew something was up, but nobody had ever told him for the 20 years he was playing before that. And, you know, he was like, wow. So we, you know, all of a sudden now we're showing him the why and here, let's try this and let's try this for balance and yada, yada, yada. And then, you know, we just started to grow that relationship. And the funny thing from that day is, hey, do you have some people that you teach that I could come watch you teach? And I was thinking, no, nobody that's worth coming over to me, not for an NBA coach. And there happened to be one guy who turned out to be headed down the path of possibly ended up in the NBA. He was playing, you know, first division in Europe and was headed to EuroLeague until he had some knee issues. But he was the guy, and coach came over and started, you know, we started sharing and taking notes. And my thing is, I wanted to change. First off, I wanted the game to benefit, you know, because there's all these great people involved in the game. And I thought that, you know, things could be done more efficiently because they could be done better, and it would be better for the players, and it would give the coaches more tools. So, you know, you get to that, and then you go, and I just started giving it to my friends here. And how can I help you? And I was helping players, and next thing you know, you go down that path and you just keep growing that stuff, and said, hey, you know what? We should have this around.
Yes. Spo realized you were doing something different. It feels like now, like, Spo is consensus best coach in the world, I would say, like, from my vantage point. What makes Spo different?
Oh, man. You know, wiring is a big part of how people, you know, he's super competitive, super curious, incredibly diverse in his approach. He's willing to find out and say, okay, how are we going to get better? Like he tells the story all the time, because when he coached in 2010 with the first Big Three team, and they played the Dallas Mavericks and ended up losing the series. And it's funny, he comes out and says, man, I got my butt kicked. I got out-coached and da da da. And he's just that guy. Nobody's going to outwork him. And nobody's going to put in more effort and more thought. And, you know, he's ultra committed. And he can coach any kind of team. You can take a team of superstars like the Big Three team. And then you can take teams like the team that went to the finals in the bubble. It eight undrafted guys.
Right, you know? right.
And then some cast-offs. And it's like, okay, how the hell did you do that?
Yeah. You
know? And there's always a way, you know, you're out there to win, and you're trying to find the solution to do that. You know?
Yeah.
And he believes in his guys, and the guys believe in him. And even when we're short guys, it's like, hey, we've got enough, you know, we've got enough to win a game. Let's go win a game.
You know? Yep.
So it's very, very present while being very forward looking, you know, so that's a unique combination for sure.
Right. Rob, before we get out of here, the biggest misconception about the NBA.
Oh boy, I've never thought about that before. I don't know, maybe that it takes a certain type of player, a certain type of skill set, a certain type of superstar to be in it. I think people that are trying to get to the NBA or trying to be a professional player, so many just go about it the wrong way.
What's the right way?
Well, Think of it in these terms, and you've heard this. Every high school coach says this. Every college coach says this. Every coach says this. Let's say we'll take a college time. There's 40 minutes in a game, and there's 10 guys on the floor. And how many minutes are you going to have the ball? And if you watch the way people try to learn the game, most of it is with the ball in their hands. And that's not how the game's played.
Yeah.
See all the teachings. And I watch, you know, people send me videos all the time. What do you think of this? What do you think of this? And I see the way they're trying to teach everybody. And partially because when you're doing an individual session, gotta be considered by the ball, right? It's centered around the ball. That's what people think.
Well, you could practice moving off the ball easily, even in a one-on-one training session, right?
I think it's 1,000 times harder than people think.
Mm.
Because the part about it, and this is another misconception about the NBA, and I've kind of alluded to it previously, they're the smartest basketball players in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, you know, like I'll be around some college kids. I have a friend that coached a college basketball team, and, you know, we would talk about it. And then like, I said, what are you guys going to do after college? Oh, we're going to go play overseas. And I go, Let me introduce you to Bolsha. He's a 7-footer who plays for Partizan Belgrade. Pretty sure he's not going to let you take his spot. And here's a guy named Amadou. He plays for, and he's not going to let you take his spot. And these guys are killers. And these guys are brilliant basketball players. And I said, the hardest thing is you guys don't even consider what it's going to take mentally to do our activations, to do our warm-ups.
The
level of detail is shocking to the mind of a basketball player. They just can't wrap their heads around that. So, you know, that's a couple of them for sure. And I think that, you know, if you try to go down the, you know, find out what a role that you could fit, that you could do, and do that first. Build from something that you can do rather than build from something that somebody else does.
Yeah, you know? Especially like a star player, because then there's only 30 spots to be have. At least there's 370 if you go with the other.
You're right. Watch people train and they're working on these 14 dribble combo moves. And
at least work for the one of the 370. That's hard enough, but you're going for the 30. You know what I mean?
20 guys in the world that play like that, you know?
Right.
It's so much easier to go. Go watch Duncan play. Go try to play with him. Yeah. I can't even express to you how mind-bogglingly difficult that is.
Yeah.
But that's a simple version. Learn how to rebound and box out and play defense and communicate. You know, communication level is so off the charts.
Yeah.
There's a bunch of them, and I'm sure we could. That'd be a whole podcast.
Yeah. Notes. You'll come back one day.
I always look forward to it. Yeah.
Rob, you can catch Rob at the Shooting Guy on Instagram. Where else? You like my podcast voice?
That right? Yeah, you sound like that guy who does the movie commercials.
Yeah,
in a world.
Right. I need some of those, Rob. What you're talking about? I need some of those. You know.
I love the podcast voice.
All right, you can catch Rob at the Shooting Guy. Anywhere else, Rob? Where can they find you?
I'll work on that. I should probably get more public with some things, because we're going to do some things. We're going to get to the book, and we're going to introduce some concepts and things about basketball through players. And then we're also going to, you know, that's kind of a cool thing. We're helping collaborate on a basketball shoe, which will be really
cool. Oh, really? That's cool.
Yeah, that'll be exciting. Yeah.
Okay.
We'll get that word out there. I'll work out. I'll be better at how can you find this guy if people really want to.
Okay. Well, good luck with the rest of your season with the Heat, and we'll talk soon.
My guy, appreciate you.
Later.